It's time to immerse yourself in the world of college football. ESPN 1000 has studied hard and has all the answers. This is Chicago's College Tailgate Show with Jonathan Hood, Chris Black, and Adam Abdallah. Advanced degrees not required. Understanding the Wildcat? Essential. Chicago's College Tailgate Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
What's up and welcome in. This is Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app, brought to you by Four Winds Casino, along with Adam Abdallah and the returning Chris Black. I'm Jonathan Hood. You can watch the show on Twitch. Go to ESPN 1000 Chicago for twitch.tv. Also, follow the show on Twitter. ESPN 1000 CCT is where you can follow the show as we give you week 8 of the college football season, as we build a bridge to Notre Dame football as they take on Pittsburgh. A 1:30 pregame, a 2:30 kick right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So the Big Ten season is here, guys. It started off yesterday with a, not a bang, but that was Wisconsin was able to get the job done over Illinois by the score of 45-7, as they say down there, Adam. Illinois, as Graham Mertz comes in, the quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers. He broke the program record for completion percentage in the game on Friday, completing 20 of 21 passes, good for 248 yards and 5 touchdowns, as Illinois starting off 0-1 against Paul Chryst.
Put him in the Heisman race, right? Graham Mertz, Heisman candidate?
Sure.
Against Illinois?
A Heisman watch at 12-20.
Against Illinois? Well, I mean, look, you know Wisconsin wanted to avenge that upset from last season, and this is kind of going to be, I don't want to say a down year for Illinois, because they're all kind of down years, but last year was probably an up year for Illinois, right? They had a lot of talent leave for graduating talent. Some entered the draft. So I feel like this is, if there's going to be a down year, this is going to be a down year for Illinois, especially given the schedule that they have to play. There's no cupcakes. You're not playing, you know, the Southern Directional Schools of Illinois this year. You're playing all Big Ten schools. So they could get a few wins here or there, but ultimately I think this is going to be a down year for Lovie Smith and his program. And Wisconsin, on the other hand, they've got a team that looks like they could beat the world right now, putting up 45 points against Illinois, but again, it's still Illinois, so let's temper expectations a little bit here.
Graham Mertz, quarterback for the Badgers, something that we haven't seen. This team usually has a good defense, good run game, but they're lacking that quarterback to go down the field. And we also talk about how that offense was successful against the Fighting Illini last night. 23 first downs, and on third down, they went 8 of 14, so Lovie's team just could not get off the field last night. And you see the time of possession, 43 minutes and 28 seconds to 16 for the Fighting Illini. So Lovie's squad has a lot to work on here in this short Big Ten season. Wisconsin looks like a legitimate top 25 team. They're ranked 14th. I assume they'll move up after this performance. But it's a great start because the Big Ten is back. And finally, we are getting the Midwest teams that we all watch here in Chicago back into the college football fold.
Let us be your soundtrack for your college football Saturday. Watch the games if you care to, but listen to our show again. We're here until 1:30 right here on ESPN 1000. A couple of news and notes for you regarding Illinois, and we'll take your phone calls as well. If you're listening to the show and you're a college football fan, come on in. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. To Adam's point, boy, you know, Illinois could have used Illinois State, UConn, Bowling Green. That was going to be the schedule starting off, because you want to have some momentum going into Big Ten season, but life hits you fast when you take on Wisconsin, especially on the road. That's one thing. The other thing, too, is that the defense has always been steady for Lovie Smith. You've got a pass rusher, a linebacker like Harding, a run-stuffing guy that was terrific for this Illinois team. Illinois jumped to 83rd in S&P Plus in mid-September to 51st in early November. It's about last year, 83rd to 51st. So the one thing that you know about Lovie Smith's teams, wherever he's going to go, is it's going to be an opportunistic defense, but it's always going to lack offensively. Here's one thing for you, Adam, is that Illinois was able to reach out to a St. Louis high school coach, Corey Patterson, to help out with the St. Louis area recruiting, like downstate, like middle of the state to into Missouri to try to be able to help with recruiting. And so there was some four-star recruits out of St. Louis, which is fine. But once again, it's like we talk about of all college football, right? The old school of running the football and playing good defense and thinking that you're going to win a ball game, that doesn't work with offenses that are vertical. This is going to be the issue with Illinois again. Good enough defense, but they just don't have enough offensively to survive.
And Illinois is going to need all that kind of help they can get, you know, as far as recruiting goes, because you're still in the Midwest. You're recruiting with Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio, you know, all of the Indiana schools, Notre Dame. Like, those, you're battling with all of those teams, Northwestern, Wisconsin. All those teams are looking for talent in the same backyard that you're looking for talent. So Illinois and Lovie Smith, they're going to have to look at those transfers. They're going to have to look at, you know, the transfer portal, the JUCO transfers, all that kind of stuff, having connections with high school coaches like that, because that's how they're going to win games, is just finding those guys who want chances at other schools. They want more playing time because they're behind other guys. And Lovie's going to have to coach up this defense. This is his defense that he still had the cover to. It's still implementing his defense. So they just need to be a defensively sound team. They need to be something like an old school SEC team where they're going to have a really sound defense. They need to be Pitt, have a really sound defense, run the ball, and just be plucky. You know, that's my term for Pitt today. Be plucky. Keep it interesting against Notre Dame. They're susceptible. They didn't look good last week. So just be that team that people are not afraid to play, but are, that you could be on upset alert every week, right? That's what Illinois should be every year.
You know what's interesting is
Iowa.
Is Adam,
yes.
You...
Yes, Iowa. Be Iowa. That's Iowa.
It's going to be tough for them to get to that level, because you listed off the recruiting battle for Lovie Smith in Illinois, and you mentioned a lot of teams in the same area that's all recruiting the same talent. Not a lot of those teams are powerhouses. Purdue, Indiana, Northwestern, right? Like Missouri, you know, because if you're talking about real Southern Illinois, those aren't powerhouses. So, like, there is opportunity if Lovie Smith can keep talent in state. You know, he's not, and I get it, and like the thing that you want to avoid is those top Illinois players going to Michigan, going to Wisconsin, going to Ohio State, going to Penn State, because those are the big dogs in the Big Ten. So you need to find a way to get more of that local talent to stay put to allow him to build. And I get it, he's going to put together the team with the transfers, the JUCO guys, but... You know, overall, long term, a part of the progress and success of Iowa is because Iowa kids stay in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. So Mertz was outstanding for Wisconsin, as you're listening to Chicago's College Tailgate. Jonathan, Adam, and Chris on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Mertz was on fire, and Lovie Smith disappointed.
And Mertz is out there as the day one starter. And he's going for the end zone again, and it's caught again by Jake Ferguson, his second touchdown of the first half. And what a start for Graham Mertz. He's still perfect on the evening. And this time they'll pass it, and look who is wide open. Jake Ferguson, make it three touchdowns for the tight end and make it five on the passing end for the redshirt freshman Graham Mertz.
You know, as we came up to Camp Randall, thought I had the team more ready, more prepared to play than what we showed out there tonight. We will play better than that. We're a better football team than that. Everything that seemed like that we had seen didn't say that, but that's what happened. You have to give Wisconsin a lot of credit. They made the plays when they needed to. Their quarterback played outstanding ball, but we have to get him a little bit of, you know, a lot more, you know, competition on some of, you know, some of the, you know, the touchdown passes on the defensive side of the football. And offensively, we've got to be able to run the football better than that.
The Lion Eyes 0-1, and Lovie says this game yesterday counts as only one game.
Well, it only counts one loss. I mean, it's kind of simple as that. And when you play as bad as we did, you expect to lose. So what we saw, we didn't see that. You know, we had, you know, the 14-7 game or so, or, you know, after Tariq's interception or fumble recovery for a touchdown. He had opportunities. There was it's kind of crunch time a little bit there. And, you know, next week and going forward, got to be able to step up when it gets to situations like that. You know, defensively losing Jake, course, not having Melo in, out there, we weren't at our best. But hopefully this week we'll get a lot of those guys back, and we can play better ball.
Lovie Smith.
Well, and you know what? He says it's just one loss, but that's an eighth of the season. Next week there'll be a quarter through the season. So, you know, it's one loss, but it's one it's a big loss because it's only eight games, and we lost one of them. It's one game, but there's eight of them, and we lost one. That's an eighth of the season. Next week, a quarter of the season. Two more games after that. Three more games after that. It'll be half of the season, two quarters of the season, and then we just got to play better.
You know, we were talking about recruiting in Illinois. Heading into this 2020 season, 24/7 Sports ranks the Fighting Illini 14th in the Big Ten. It's going to be a rough go this season for Illini fans.
Hello, Gideon.
Guys, I want to play for Lovie Smith. Like, I think the recruits will come. He was a great coach as the head coach of the Bears, and I think he'll be a great coach of the Illini. We'll write him on our history books. Last night was pathetic. The quarterback play for Illinois was pathetic last night. And then in comparison to that, the quarterback play for Wisconsin was obviously amazing. I think he had one incompletion. It was insane. Our offense didn't perform. I went to a Bears game back in 2010. It was in the middle of a blizzard. It was against the Patriots. We lost 45-14. This game was a worse experience than that. And I was sitting in my living room and not freezing. So it was bad last night. I wasn't happy with the result, but we'll come out next week and we'll get a win over Purdue.
Gideon, are you taking the hog out today for a spin?
I am not. It's a little too chilly. Fair. And I'm going to spend the day walking around. I live near the Northwestern campus, so I'm going to be walking around Northwestern with my dog and my fiance.
All right, my friend. We appreciate it. Make sure you keep that hog zipped up. All right, coming up, we get a chance to talk about Northwestern, the aforementioned Wildcats. They have a game that's going to take place later tonight. We'll get a chance to talk about that and more.
Did you know that Gideon has a motorcycle, a chopper that he takes out?
Oh, he didn't say anything about a motorcycle. Oh, yeah.
More college football talk is right around the corner. Chicago's College Tailgate Show.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
We'll hear from Brad Edwards from ESPN.com. Does a great job with the analytics of college football. Good to hear from Brad on this College Football Saturday. Jonathan, Adam, and Chris on Chicago's College Tailgate. Follow the show on Twitter at ESPN1000CCT. We're sponsored by Four Winds Casino. So the other team in town, Northwestern, will get underway as Big Ten action is on our screens. You know, Adam, this is the 15th year for Pat Fitzgerald. If he wins today, it'll be win number 100 for him.
Oh.
So Fitzgerald's Wildcats averaged only 19.5 points per game, ranked 122nd in offensive S&P+, and outscored opponents by 12 points all season. But thanks to a 5-1 score wins, they somehow went, 10-3 at one point. But the thing is, though, is that just kind of like Illinois, Northwestern has a hard time trying to find their scoring. You know, we sat there at, is it Bat 13 was the name of the club?
17, right?
Bat 17?
Yeah, Bat 17, yeah.
In Evanston,
great sandwiches.
Right? So we were there at that bar in Evanston after Northwestern got their ass kicked by Ohio State, and there was Chris talking about McCall, the offensive coordinator, right? How is Mick McCall still there as an offensive coordinator? That's a major issue. McCall's past six offenses have averaged an S&P+ ranking of 95th. That can't do. And so the loyalty of Fitzgerald is there because he's not firing coaches left and right to try to make the program better.
Well, they brought in a new offensive coordinator this year, so they've got Mike Bajakian. So he's going to come in. He came in from Boston College where he led Boston College to have the best rushing attack in the ACC. So he comes in. So the offense should look better. The question is going to be,
you hope,
do they have the personnel to have that offense look better? So against Maryland, probably. They're an 11.5 point favorite against Maryland. It's a good game for Northwestern to get started against, so they should be able to win this game against one of the bottom feeders of the Big Ten in Maryland. So I think that, you know, with this all comes with time, right? You've got the coordinator there. He's going to implement a system. Now you have to have the personnel to implement the system. Their defense should still be good, but they just need to score more points. And hopefully bringing in a new offensive coordinator and a new system will lead to that. It's just a matter of how often were these guys allowed to practice? How familiar are they with this scheme? Can they implement it on the field? All that stuff. But I think today against Maryland, they should be able to, you know, work on some things and work out some of the kinks in that offense and trying to get that scheme rolling.
So last year for Northwestern, they go 3-9 on the season. They go 1-8 in the conference. They did not play Maryland last season. Their three wins against UNLV, against UMass, and against Illinois. They won that game at the end of the season 29-10. You guys documented it. The offense was the issue. The offense has been the issue for Northwestern for a couple of years now. Mick McCall let go at the end of the season. New system, you're right, and we'll see how this goes. The one thing that I continually always bring up when we look at Northwestern football is Northwestern football is nice because they're competitive most seasons.
Their defense keeps them in the ball games.
Keeps them in the ball games, mm-hmm. But they kind of fly under the radar. There's not a lot of eyeballs in conversation about Northwestern football either getting to the next level or paying attention to the lack of success that Fitzgerald has had in Evanston. Because why? They have a beautiful campus. They have new buildings,
sure,
infrastructure, and they're a clean program. So he gets credit for all of that. They just don't win football games. And if you want to argue about it, look back at the losing streak that they had in the middle of last season. I mean, they only win three games last year. For the talent that they have bringing in to Evanston and that campus, they should be a better football team. And I get it. If you want to compare Northwestern to the powers of the Big Ten, they're probably never going to compete with Ohio State on a yearly basis. But they shouldn't be in the basement. And so I think that's where we have to look at this season. The conversation about Northwestern is Pat Fitzgerald needs to bounce back. You're 15. You win three games last season. You have to win at least half of your games this season, or else we need to have the conversation. Is the program really going in the right direction?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you look at their schedule, like, they should beat Maryland, Iowa, Nebraska, they should win. No, I don't know. Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Minnesota, and Illinois. So this is a tough schedule this year. Again, you know, Fitzgerald, I don't think they're ever going to get rid of Fitzgerald. Like, that's not the issue. I don't think they're ever going to get rid of him.
So, again, this is the conversation we had last year on the program. What is Northwestern football? Like, what are Northwestern fans looking for in this football team? Jonathan, like, when, like, okay, are you cool with the three wins and you're just happy that they compete in games? Like, is that, and you're cool that College Game Day makes the jokes that the grass is taller at Ryan Field, so then fast teams that come to Northwestern play a little bit slower for that tough matchup? Like, what is the goal for Northwestern football? I would imagine it's competing to try and get to the Rose Bowl each year, right?
Yeah, you want to be one of the upper echelon teams. You won't mm-hmm. be Ohio State. You won't be Michigan. So, but you have to be able to check some kind of box, I think, in the Big Ten. And the idea that there's no expectations. See, you can skate like this when there's no expectations.
Right.
This show is the hardest show on Northwestern. The whole station, no one talks and tells the truth about Northwestern like this show. Because, I mean, the numbers are what they are. They need to be better. And mm-hmm. so it's kind of like Illinois in that same way. The defense is solid, though. The numbers say that their numbers are solid defensively. Point is, though, is that there has to be higher expectations than saying, hey, we were out there and we lost by 5 or 6, so pat us on the head. Your expectations has to be higher. Their recruiting's got to get better. That's how I look at it, for sure. Howard Griffith from the Big Ten Network asked him on Cap and Jay Hood how Northwestern's offense can improve.
Peyton Ramsey's going to be the starting quarterback for him this year. He's coming over from Indiana, who kind of saw the writing on the wall there. Michael Penix is going to be Indiana's starting quarterback. Has some issues as far as staying healthy. But Peyton has done some unbelievable things when he was able to play at Indiana, talking about delivering the football, getting it out, and really helping that team win a lot of those games over the last couple of years. So that gives them a shot. They've got a new offensive coordinator who's more of an RPO guy, so maybe they can you know, start to get more explosive. That's what they have to do. The one thing about Fitz, though, is he's never had back-to-back down years. That just, for whatever reason, doesn't happen in that program. Making a switch at offensive coordinator seems to have energized a lot of the players in that locker room. So it's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, it's one of those things that if you don't have the quarterback play you need at the college level, a difference maker, you're not going to win many football games. And they couldn't get that done last year. And it really showed from an offensive standpoint.
So some thoughts there from Howard Griffith regarding Northwestern. But it's so right, Adam. Just, you know, when we take a look at their schedule, number one Northwestern schedule, you know, you want them to be able to give you more than just one upset. You want them to be able to give you a couple of games where you say, okay, here's where we are in the Big Ten. But, you know, and again, it's about expectations. It's a winnable game against Michigan State, who's down. Purdue, down. Maryland, that's a winnable game tonight at 6:30 on the Big Ten Network. And it's a photo finish, a flip of the coin against Illinois. You should be able to get at least four wins on the surface from this particular schedule.
Yeah, and they get a home game against Wisconsin where the grass is taller. So they upset Wisconsin.
See, you know that that's a
maybe
thing.
Maybe they upset
every
Wisconsin
year.
There. Maybe
you
they
know that's a thing.
Upset alert when Wisconsin comes to town on November 21st.
So the Big Ten is back, and we're definitely happy about that, because now we start to see the Pac-12 right around the corner. They will return, and then the college football puzzle will be complete. Some thoughts from Kirk Herbstreit from SportsCenter talking about the Big Ten's late start is an advantage.
It may sound strange, but I think there's some advantages in the fact that they've been practicing for 10 weeks. Think about that. That's like having two training camps that you would have in August. And I think it allows the freshmen really to be in a position to be able to contribute and be a little bit further along in week one than they would be under a normal set of circumstances where, you know, you have 3 weeks of camp and you get ready to break and you see if they're ready to respond or not. So, I think obviously a disadvantage when it comes to everybody else who's been playing ball and having a chance to show people who they are. But an advantage when it comes to relying on some of the younger players to have a lot of reps against good on good and really finding out where they are and how much they can really help.
Chris, do you buy that the Big Ten has an advantage over a lot of teams because they're starting late?
I do not. This is why. When the ACC, Big 12, SEC all kicked off, we've seen upsets. And we've seen teams that were supposed to just crush other weaker opponents within the conference either lose outright or it's a really tight game. So I think what we'll see here with the Big Ten, and we're already seeing it here early on, the first 27 minutes of Saturday action from the Big Ten is Ohio State. Everyone says Ohio State's in the conversation with Clemson and Alabama, right, for the best team in the conference. Country. Mm-hmm. Right now they're tied 7-7 with Nebraska in the first quarter of that game. So, I mean, I don't know if they'll really have the upper hand there. And then add into the fact that if there's any delay to any of these games, they're eliminating the game as a no contest within Big Ten play. So you may not even get to your 8 conference games if you have a COVID-19 related postponement. So I don't think it's an advantage. I think the advantage would have been playing with the rest of the teams. And I get it. After this weekend, we're going to see some W's put up by teams in the Big Ten, and then they're going to pop back up in the top 25 rankings. But I don't think it's an advantage.
No, not at all. I agree with you. I think that the biggest disadvantage is, yeah, they practice a lot. Okay, cool. But a lot of teams practice a lot. We don't know how much tackling they were doing in practice. We saw what BYU did to Navy earlier this year and just manhandling that team. But you look at Ohio State's schedule, right? If they miss one of their big games, if they miss the game next week against Penn State for some reason, for a COVID-related reason, if they miss the game against Michigan, like they're going to have to put up showboat-type points for the college football committee to consider them should they miss a game, right? If they miss a game or they if they lose a game, it's over. But if they miss a game, then you've got to look to the committee and say, look, with the 7 games or 6 games or whatever that Ohio State played plus the college plus a Big Ten championship, does the eye test show you that even though they didn't play as many games, are they still one of the best teams in football? Because you've factored that in with maybe an undefeated Pac-12 team, and then you're looking at it, okay, eye test. Which undefeated Big Ten or Pac-12 team looks better? Because as of right now, you're going to have Alabama, you're going to have Clemson in there for sure. right? We're probably not going to get a Big 12 school in the college football playoff. And that's why, that's the thing. With Ohio State, it's college football playoff or bust, because they were the ones that were pounding the desk so hard when the season was canceled originally,
right?
Because they know they can win a national championship with the team that they've assembled this year.
Well, they think they can.
They think they can. Yeah. But any slip up and they might not even be considered. So no, this isn't an advantage because you can't screw up.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah. The other thing is too, is we talked about with Illinois, you want your tomato cans first, right? Yeah. To get yourself ready. I mean, it's great for us as college football fans that you start with conference first, because now you're getting what is considered main event top shelf matchups early. Yeah. But the point is, though, for some college teams, they need that non-conference to be able to figure out who is great for the rotation, who you can trust, all that. So that way you have momentum going into the conference play. You don't have that immediately going to conference play. It's great for us as college football fans, but for coaches, it's like, well, we got to prepare like much sooner.
Those are their preseason games. They need those.
Yeah. You want that momentum, but you don't have it now. Mm-hmm. It's good for us, though.
Well, we talk about how every year there's a school that has that, like, that big kickoff game, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's been Michigan, Alabama. It's been USC, Alabama before. We see, like, Oregon, Auburn, like, those big kickoff games. Those schools put themselves at risk, because as soon as you lose that game, your season might be over from the first game. Now, you've got a chance the entire season to redeem yourself, and you're like, well, now they're a different team than they were at the beginning. But a lot of these teams that schedule non-conference games to begin their season, or you look at like Northwestern and Maryland, like them, Northwestern's got an easy game, even though not in the conversation, but still, like, Ohio State should be up more on Nebraska. Is it because they didn't have the non-conference game to start with? Is it because that they,
or are they pressing,
know?
Because they know they have to put up a spot?
Absolutely.
Because they see what Clemson's doing each and every week.
Exactly.
You know, and I would also say this, from a player standpoint, if someone tests positive for COVID-19 and you're a player, you have to be out for 21 days.
Right.
I mean, and then you get reincorporated with
That's
the team.
So you're out the season.
Right, exactly. So, like, the Big Ten has some pretty tight COVID-19 protocols in place for this. It's going to be tough to suggest that they are better off competing-wise. You know, health and safety, probably they're the best set up for this. But competing with the other teams, I don't think that this puts them at an advantage.
Somewhat of a positive with that is that you have expanded rosters. There are no red shirts, but you don't know if those red shirts are ready to play on right. that level. Like, your top-level guys are ready, but just because you have expanded rosters doesn't necessarily mean that those guys that normally wouldn't play can be able to help you and pay dividends. We'll go around week 8 of college football with Brad Edwards and give you a scoreboard next.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's College Tailgate Show with Jay Hood, Black, and Abdallah. The CCT scoreboard on ESPN 1000.
Here's Chris Black. Chris.
Thank you, Jonathan. We take a look at the top 25 scoreboard. Clemson up 17-0 on Syracuse with 4:25 left in the first quarter. Ohio State just scored. It's 14-7 over Nebraska, 4 minutes left in the first quarter of that contest. Other scores in the top 25, North Carolina up 7-0 on North Carolina State, a minute left in the first quarter. Kansas State up 7-0 on Kansas, 9 minutes left in the first quarter. And the other top 25 matchup right now, Coastal Carolina up 7-0 over Georgia Southern with 3 minutes left in the first quarter. That's right. Coastal Carolina ranked the number 25th team in the country. And that's the top 25 scoreboard right here on Chicago's College Tailgate.
Glad that you're with us here for Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000, along with Chris Bleck and Adam Abdallah, Jonathan Hood with you. So glad you're with us. By the way, the Chanticleers now. Watch out now. Myrtle Beach's own Coastal Carolina. Very good.
Until the Big Ten is mixed back into the top 25, right?
Ah, Coastal Carolina, you know, they can be part of the Big Ten. Just
hang the banner.
You need that Myrtle Beach market as
hang
we go
the banner.
To Brad Edwards.
We were 25th once.
Brad Edwards covers college football like a blanket for ESPN.com. He joins us on the Corona Hotline. Brad, Jonathan, Adam, and Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, happy to join you guys. And by the way, just a little public service announcement. It's actually pronounced Chanticleers, not Chanticleers.
I'm from Chicago.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, if you have any of those folks in your area, you don't want to get them on your back. You know? So actually, they're happy. Everyone's talking about them.
Pardon my Midwestern accent. Brad, I want to get your thoughts about last night's game. We were talking, that's how we opened the show, talking about Wisconsin and Illinois. Mertz looked really good. Illinois, once again, struggling offensively. What was your reaction to that game yesterday?
Well, I have to confess, even though I am a college football person by trade, I'm also a lifelong Dodgers fan, and sure. I was far more engaged in the Dodgers game at the moment. I flipped back and forth and saw a little bit, and then, of course, it didn't take too long before you were convinced that Illinois wasn't coming back. So I can't say I saw as much of Graham Mertz as I would have liked to. I saw his stats in the box score, which were really impressive. I saw a couple of the touchdown passes to the tight end. But you could take it one of two ways. One is that, man, this might be the first time that Wisconsin has had a really dynamic quarterback since Russell Wilson. Or if you want to be pessimistic, you could say, you know what, even with that, they still had a hard time getting the running game going against what's clearly not one of the better defenses they're going to face this year. So you could look at either way and be either excited or a little bit dreadful about the season if you're a Wisconsin fan. On the Illinois side, I do think it's got to be disappointing that they weren't really able to generate much offensively. You probably weren't expecting to win the game, but I think that was the area that was that was the toughest to take. Outside of a little bit of running is how poor the quarterback play was. So not a lot to really take away from that if you're an Illini fan and really get excited about the rest of the season.
Ohio State up 14-7 right now on Nebraska. Do you think Ohio State is going to be in a position where they never take their foot off the gas just in case there's any doubt that they should not be included in the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think there's every reason to play that way for the entirety of the eight games or nine games, whatever it ends up being, assuming they get to play them all. And that's another reason to do it. You don't know, given the Big Ten guidelines, whether they'll even play every game. And the smaller the sample, the less margin for error there is. And so I think they would be wise to just keep the pedal down. On top of that, though, I was having a discussion a couple of days ago about Clemson. And how bad they beat Georgia Tech last week, and obviously they're going to put a big number up on Syracuse today. And if you're Clemson, I think that you should continue to do that, because you remember last year, we're coming down the home stretch. It was such a big deal who was going to get that number one seed, between LSU and Ohio State. Clemson wasn't really in the discussion at that time, but it was obvious that there were three teams that were a level above everyone else, and two of them were going to have to play each other in a semifinal. One was going to get, I don't know if we'd call it a bye, but certainly a much easier draw in the semifinal. And between Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State, it seems like we could have the same situation again this year. So if I'm any of those teams, I'm going out there and I am trying to look like the best team in the country every single Saturday for four full quarters, because at the end of the day, you want that number one seed from the selection committee, so you're only having to win one tough game in the playoff, not two of them.
When we look at last Saturday night, Alabama and Georgia, it was a close game in the first half. In the second half, Alabama shut out the Bulldogs' offense, and they ran away with the game. When we look at Georgia's future for the rest of this season, what did last Saturday night's game mean to them?
Yeah, I don't think you should take too much away from it defensively. I think they're the best defense in college football, and I think they're going to show that for the rest of the regular season. But the question is, I think you could also go back and look at that and say they didn't play that poorly defensively. Alabama just has that many playmakers that are difficult to stop, and the same thing's going to be true if you play Clemson or if you play Ohio State. So the question for Georgia, whether this is about winning the SEC championship game in a rematch with Alabama if they get there, or whether it's about winning the playoff if they get there, it's – how can you go out and hang 40 on one of those teams? Because that's what it's going to take to win. And the question that Kirby Smart had to start asking this week as he was in a bye and then looking ahead to the coming weeks is, does he have a quarterback on his roster that gives them a better chance of doing that? And I don't know what the answer to that is, but if he feels like that, hey, you know what, that maybe our ceiling offensively is higher with someone else, with a JT Daniels or DeJuan Mathis in their quarterback instead, then I'm not saying you make a change right away, because I don't think Stetson Bennett has done anything to deserve being yanked out of the offense at this point. But I think you need to start giving some looks to someone else, allow that person to get some reps at you know, certain important stages of the game, and see what they can do. Because, look, as much as you can say, yeah, look, he's an inexperienced quarterback. His receivers are mostly inexperienced. There's a lot of the offense, you know, that has room to grow at Georgia. I still don't look at Stetson Bennett and say he's a guy who can go head-to-head in a duel with a Mac Jones or a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields. And so if you're at Georgia, your goal is to win the whole thing. It has to be, given the way that you've recruited and how close you've been in recent years. And so I think that's kind of where you go from here. Is there another answer offensively? And if there is, you know, start to take some looks at someone else at quarterback and see what happens.
Brett Edwards from ESPN, a college football analyst, with Jonathan, Adam, and Chris on Chicago's College Tailgate on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Brad, what do the numbers say about Michigan against Minnesota? It's very interesting, this matchup. I'm looking forward to it tonight.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a fun one, and especially, you know, given the question at quarterback for Michigan. You know, that you, after so many years of having a pretty good idea of what you had, and, you know, with Che Patterson coming in, like, you'd seen him play at Ole Miss, you had a pretty good idea of what Michigan was getting, and now with Milton, I don't know. It'll be exciting to see, and, of course, Michigan has quite a few questions to answer at other positions as well. So that makes it intriguing, because you go in with the assumption that they have more talent overall than Minnesota. But at the same time, I think it's hard to argue that the two most dynamic offensive players in this game aren't on Minnesota's side, with Tanner Morgan and Rashad Bateman. So that to me makes this game really fun. I know Minnesota's got its own issues with having to replace guys on defense, which you know, could make it a higher scoring type game. We'll wait and see. What we do know is that if Michigan loses this opener, you know, people are going to look at Jim Harbaugh as a guy who started in 2015, going up against PJ Fleck, who started at Minnesota 2 years later. And if the verdict after tonight is that Minnesota's program is ahead of Michigan's program, it's a very fair question to ask why. How could that possibly be that in less time a coach at Minnesota has been able to do more than the coach at Michigan did? And so that's where this conversation is going to head if the result goes a certain way tonight. But at least, you know, for the rest of today, we'll look forward to what I think should be a pretty fun, competitive game.
Brad, we're glad you spent some time with us in Chicago. All the best to your Dodgers. It's been a long time since the late 80s for you.
Yes. It was my senior year of high school, was the old Kirk Gibson game one, and then everything that followed. So it's been a long wait.
Thank you, Brad, as always.
All right. See you guys.
It's Brad Edwards, college football analyst for ESPN, with us on Chicago's College Tailgate.
You know, off of what Brad just said about Minnesota-Michigan, the last time Michigan won 11 games was 2011. Minnesota won 11 games last season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about the perspective of the two schools and what they mean to college football, and the lack of high-level success at Michigan, and Minnesota's already right there. This is a big game tonight.
Listen, we're going to talk gambling in about 15 minutes, but Jonathan, I told you last week when we were sitting here, I said Minnesota's a point-and-a-half favorite right now when the line came out, and now they're a three-point dog. So we saw exactly what we predicted last Saturday. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want Michigan, jump on this early. If you want Minnesota, hold off a minute.
Yeah.
Right. Because Michigan backers are going to come in. There might not be 100,000 at the big house because they're all sitting at home pressing send on gamble on their app so they can gamble on Michigan tonight. So I think that it's super telling, the line, where it came out, where Vegas thinks it is, and where the public is going.
Last time Michigan lost at Minnesota, 1977.
Yeah. You know what's so interesting about this, like what Adam just said, right, Chris? It's like, oh, it's game week. We're a dog. Oh, no. Oh, no. There's no way. Still like Minnesota. Nonetheless, we will... we'll see. It's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, to Chris's point, how razor thin that is. How is it that Michigan coming in on the road going to TCF Bank is just a 3.5-point favorite? Why is it that? It's based on what you just talked about.
Well, we
the
also,
lack of success.
Yeah, lack of success. Quarterback play, which has plagued Michigan over the last couple of years. They said that Joe Milton has been running with the ones in practice this week. They haven't announced an official starter, but it seems like Joe Milton is the guy.
Yeah.
Last year when Shea Patterson was heading out of the Michigan program, Joe Gattis talked about how they need to find a new leader. So Milton took it upon himself in the offseason to take leadership classes. So we'll see how that transforms this offense. But, I mean, listen, that's where you have to look. And Coach Kaki used to be the guy who was the quarterback whisperer, and it seems like he's continued to have problems finding a quarterback at Michigan.
And that's a great point, too, because you and I talked to P.J. Fleck in person.
Friend of the show.
At the Final Four, right?
Yes.
And
row the boat.
After that, I called Minnesota to see if I had eligibility.
Yeah.
Just because that's a dude you want to play for.
Yeah.
Like, he's amped all the time. He's on 11 all the time. Harbaugh's in your backyard trying to have a sleepover, trying to have recruits, and, like, he's trying all this weird stuff, whereas, like, Minnesota, P.J. Fleck, all he has to do is sit down in your living room with the fat tie knot. And the fat tie knot.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a fat tie knot.
Yeah.
He's got a fat tie knot.
Hell of a tie job there.
Hell of a tie job. Great tie. Great jacket
do you see him
game
today?
Day earlier. But the point is, like, which coach, if you're sitting down in your living room, are you more likely to go play for right now? Well, the answer is P.J. Fleck.
Well, here's the difference, right? One is just meandering all around, right? The conversation you can't really follow. The other, pinpoint efficiency and right to the point of exactly what he wants from his program.
You guys are too young to remember, but I swear Harbaugh was not like that as a player. I was as a producer.
That's what Waddle tells me.
Listening to that sound.
I remember watching him.
No, bro. Like the long-form thoughts of Harbaugh was salient, solid.
Meandering now.
But as a coach, I don't know what that is. I swear he was not like that when he was a Chicago Bear. So speaking of meandering thoughts, the thoughts from Jim Harbaugh, head coach of Michigan. Expectations for this year, Jim?
I really like the talent level on the team. I love the competitive nature of the team. And that is a team, you know, that, as I said, nothing more important than oneness. And I really feel like this team is at a championship level in terms of that.
In terms of that.
See a team that goes out there on Saturday night and is flying around, running to the ball, playing smart, and having at it, you know, because as I said before, I mean, especially in a first game where some guys haven't played, you know they're talented, you know they're really competitive, and so you put those talented, competitive guys out there and see what happens.
All right.
More college football talk is right around the corner. Chicago's College Tailgate Show.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
We will put money in your pocket coming up at 12 o'clock. The opportunity for you to key in on some of the big games from a sports gambling standpoint for Week 8 in college football. Chicago's College Tailgate, Jonathan, Adam, and Chris with you. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN1000CCT. I'll ask you, by the way, we turn now to Tyler Aki. Tyler, big Syracuse fan, as Clemson is leading Syracuse 17-7. Tyler, do you have the insight on how much Syracuse gets paid for this game? Usually, you know, when you are down program, you get a check. What's the check? What's Syracuse getting to get paid for this?
Let's see. Dino, however much his buyout is, I think I heard it's around $17 million, so they're just trying to cut into that number bit by bit this week.
East Coast Media Elite, Tyler Aki.
That first quarter spread cashed barely.
One thing they did well, special teams. They blocked a punt.
Okay.
That's something. It's something else. I'll tell you what. That is amazing.
Dino Babers, not a hot name, hot coaching name anymore?
I would say no.
Only in the film room for the national championship game, he's a hot name, eating all the pizza. Some thoughts now from Desmond Howard. You know, we're keeping our eyes on Ohio State and their game against Nebraska. The biggest concern for Ohio State, Des, is...
The biggest concern is who's going to play running back, who's going to replace J.K. Dobbins. I mean, he was a phenomenal running back, over 2,000 yards, average over 6 yards per carry. And when Justin Fields struggled, Greeny, don't forget Ryan Day is a brilliant play caller. J.K. Dobbins is the guy they leaned on very heavily. I mean, they just give it to him, and he can break long runs. Guy who's built low to the ground, but had enough breakaway speed that linebackers and safeties, they couldn't catch him. So how are they going to replace the productivity of J.K. Dobbins is one of the biggest issues I have. I know that Justin Fields is an incredible talent, but they don't have the running back behind them this year that they had in 2019.
That's great, but what about the Jets? All right, coming up, we'll give you a CCC scoreboard and also put money in your pocket right here.
This is Chicago's College Tailgate Show with Jay Hood, Black, and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.